Welcome to this week's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. We're going to do a little bit of a grab bag episode this weekend, but first, thank you to Shooting Performance Institute for sponsoring the show. I got to jump back. I rambled through a load that I use for 28 gauge for upland birds here in Nevada, and I completely spaced out and forgot to mention the wad I use. So I'll go through it, and hey, everybody, do your own testing, be safe, be smart. Don't take what I'm about to say as the gospel. Here is what I use and use successfully for chucker in Nevada out of a 28 gauge over under. And that is 7/8 of an ounce of sevens. So if you reload, you can buy those off sizes like a seven. But I use 7/8 of an ounce of lead shot in sevens. I use a Winchester AA hole. I use, it's called the SG28-2 wad. So it's available from Ballistic Products, no affiliation with the company, but it's the only wadding I found that holds 7/8 of an ounce in 28 gauge and holds it where, you know, you're not overloading the shell. I use 25 grains of Little Gun powder and a Winchester 209 primer. So that is my shotgun load, and I hope I'm not leaving anything out this time. But there you go. That's what I shoot and shoot successfully. Well, I should say, when I shoot successfully, it does the trick on chucker. You just got to be a little choosier with your shots. Then I want to go into something that made headlines recently, Dave. There was a poaching ring in Idaho.
Yes.
That was recently busted, a mule deer poaching ring. And why this is relevant to us, they were doing it in Unit 54 in Idaho. For those unfamiliar, it's right on that, like near Jackpot, just north of the border there.
Just north of the border, yeah.
So those were deer that migrate over into the Bull Runs, Independence, Mahoganies.
Right.
Those were part of that herd coming into Nevada. That's why it popped on my radar. But here's what I wanted to talk about real quick is every time I think, well, nobody would do that. Man, these guys, it was like they called it a poaching ring. They were fairly coordinated as far as like picking off these deer and shooting like trophy class deer out of that unit. And I think, was it five or seven guys involved?
Seven.
It was seven guys. I saw the two, I'll call them like ring leaders or whatever. They got like 5 years in prison. They forfeited all their hunting rights for life. So serious offense. And obviously these guys were not the what I typically think of as poachers, as far as, oh, hey, look at that big deer, shoot it. I don't have a tag. I don't care, shoot it. That's what I normally think goes on.
Right.
These guys.
Like mob style kind of planning.
It's so insane to me too when they have that level of organization. I'm like, man, I can barely get my own hunts together.
Right. Yeah.
Operate a poaching ring. And here's the funny part about the whole thing. Here's how these guys were busted. They got pulled over. And they had a trailer, so it was just a simple highway patrol stop. The highway patrol guy looks inside the trailer. They didn't have any coolers, but they had a bunch of like trophy class mule deer heads. They had been leaving the carcasses to rot.
Oh.
So the highway patrolman looks and goes, well, where are the coolers of the meat? You know, they're not tasked with game enforcement stuff.
Right,
so I don't think he checked IDs or hunting licenses. Well, he checked IDs for the traffic stop, but his alarm or hair on back of his neck started to stand up, and he goes, well, where's the coolers for the meat? You got head, like recent fresh dead heads in here. Where's the meat? And that's how the lid got blown off the cave. That's how they got caught.
That's where it all started.
So it wasn't any kind of like super sleuthing on behalf of the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. It was just a simple traffic stop.
Yeah.
And a state trooper or a highway patrolman that obviously is a hunter or something and went, wait a second, where the hell's the rest of this thing?
Yeah.
And at that point got Fish and Game involved.
And then everything started coming together.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, kudos to the highway patrolman.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how it got to where they were caught and stuff, but that sucks.
It's like the old, stopping somebody from a taillight and, oh, there was a murder just up the road.
Yeah, well, why is your trunk bleeding?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I think that's about it as far as housekeeping stuff. Like I said, this episode is going to kind of be a grab bag, but what Dave and I wanted to talk about and what Dave sent me a text this morning about was choosing a bird dog for Nevada.
Yes.
It's such a unique state. I think the only, I could think of like parts of Hell's Canyon that are similar. The demands on dogs, especially for upland stuff in the state of Nevada, super unique. You know, what you would look for in like the Dakotas chasing pheasant or something is not going to be what you look for out here.
No.
So you start doing some research, and I know you're on the hunt for a dog right now.
Right, right. Yeah. And that was kind of what led me to this.
Right.
You know, because as you know, you've got one as well. I mean, my English Gauge is phenomenal dog. He has been a fantastic dog.
But he's getting up there.
Well, yeah, he's going to be, at the end of this season, he'll be 9.
Okay.
So then the wife gave me the go-ahead, which is a huge, huge
It's probably thing. Led to some of your paralysis by analysis, because am I being trapped here? I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you know, and she gave me the go-ahead, because the last thing you want to do is just show up at the house with a dog.
Oh, is that, you're not supposed to do that?
You know, I did that many, many years ago with my dog Star, which my son named Star Bar Super Power Ranger.
Hell yeah.
Legal. That was her legal name. That didn't go over well.
Okay.
That just really didn't go over well. Newborn baby and a brand new black lab puppy.
Yeah. Been there, done that.
Yeah. Yep. But anyway, so that kind of got me into this, like, okay, what am I looking for specifically for Nevada and upland game?
Yes.
Now, we both know, because in my research, it got into waterfowl as well.
Yeah.
And
driest state in the union.
Driest state in the union. The thing is I used to do a lot of waterfowl when I was out in Mason Valley, out in Yerington. It doesn't seem like a very big debate. It's a lab.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it's I'd agree with that.
It could be chocolate,
yellow,
silver, black, whatever other color they're breeding right now. It's a lab.
Yes. I think the debate ends there for me. I think I even posted something one time about this is my hill to die on. And I've hunted with Chesapeakes. I've hunted with, you know, there are those guys who will take an upland breed, and because the dog likes water, they'll suddenly think they've stumbled on some great,
some hybrid, amazing hybrid
revelation,
genetic connection.
Yeah. And it's like, man, it's an upland dog. It likes water. So you use it for waterfowl. But at the end of the day, it's a lab.
Yeah.
If you're going to do that. Now, I don't know about you. I chase ducks a couple times a season. I don't have the coin to be a member out there at Canvasback.
Right.
If I was a member out there and I was one of these guys shooting a couple hundred ducks a year and I was out there all the time, maybe I'd look at a lab.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And, you know, I've got some friends that do hunt a fair amount of waterfowl.
Okay.
But they also love their upland. So, but their lab is real versatile. That it will, I mean, it won't point.
Yeah.
It will not point. And they've all told me
they use it like a flusher.
Correct. Well, as soon as they kick the birds up and they shoot one, the lab will go and retrieve the quail or the chucker, the hun, and bring it back. And like, that's all I want.
Okay.
I mean, I don't need it to point or anything. And same thing. They don't have the coin or the time to have two dogs.
Right.
So anyway, so the waterfowl thing's kind of it's a lab.
We're good. Yes. 100%.
You know,
for most of us that either don't want to drive to Greenhead every single weekend or aren't a member at a private club to hunt ducks, upland's the game in the state of Nevada.
Big time. Yeah, that is the number one thing for us is grouse, chucker, partridge.
I keep forgetting about grouse, but
yeah. Okay. Well, the only one to really hunt are the sooty and the blues.
So, yeah, I know.
You know, but whatever. So,
I
figured, you know, let's get into a little bit of what I read and researched on picking a good upland game bird dog for the state of Nevada specifically.
Okay, perfect.
Because of our terrain.
Yeah, let's get into that list. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk, sponsored by Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight. Now, right before we went to break, we started talking about upland dogs for Nevada. And you've got a chart there, Dave, talking about the three stages and of right. a trained dog. And I've always heard it referred to, and you can use them interchangeably, but basically the puppy stage, or what I'll call like a Greenbroke stage, which is essentially the dog knows basic commands, hear, heal, fetch, whatever. And then broke, which is like a dog that's on autopilot. It's got most everything down. It understands how to like work a field and work that scent cone and all that stuff. And then finished. And I've never had a finished dog.
Yeah, me neither.
Because I always think of those as like your field trial guys, where it's a very specific set of commands and the dog is very well behaved and is steady in all aspects. I've never had a finished dog. I will generally do that like Greenbroke, where they've been exposed to wild birds, they've been on hunts, they know basic commands. And then from there, I just run them. And I'm not a big stickler for like, okay, does the dog break after the shot or anything like that?
Yeah, does the dog know arm commands or anything like that?
Right, right.
And that's that trial stuff. But
yeah.
Yeah, so you've got like the... What I researched is like three stages,
yeah.
which is really similar to yours, with one of them kind of being probably more condensed. So
okay.
the age and training level that you may want to acquire a dog at. So they have the puppy stage, which
right.
that means, you know, around 50 days, you got to start the training.
Okay.
You know, start getting it familiarized. And then they have what they call a starter dog, which is your mid-range.
Probably like a Greenbroke dog.
Yeah, Greenbroke. Okay. Greenbroke dog. And then the finished dog, which is fully trained, ready to hit the field and do the whole 9 yards. Now, the starter dog is ready to hit the field. From what I've read is, you know, you just need to fine tune the dog to your hunting style.
Okay.
So that's, you know, if I was ever to acquire a non-puppy.
Right.
Which is probably where I'm looking.
Yeah.
Because
skip the uncomfortable stage.
Man, you know, the,
yeah.
the chewing things. Everyone's yeah. like, oh, yeah, the dogs aren't that expensive until they chew up your
$1,000
paneer. Yeah, exactly. So, and then the finish is just you go and hunt them. But
yeah.
some of the cool things I was reading about, and I really didn't give this a ton of thought at the beginning. I thought, well, if it's a GSP or if it's a English or if it's a Brittany, yeah, you adopt it and you're good to go.
Right.
You know,
get a puppy and
yeah, because generally I acquire them from from hunters and
right.
people that are breeding them. They were saying, you know, some of the stuff you really got to think about is the primary lineage that you're grabbing. Is it a hunting lineage or a show lineage? Because
right,
that's going
right.
to be a huge factor. Then, you know, they start talking about like, is the coat and the build of the animal okay for your type of hunting, your seasons, the seasons you hunt and the terrain you hunt. All right, I got that part. The trainability of the animal. So they're, you know, how they say, you know, when you go look at the puppies, you know, roll a ball, roll this, do something like
yeah.
that to see which out of the puppy group, which ones actually have an interest. Because if you've got a mix, and these are the pros online and the literature, but if you've got a mix of a hunting breed and a show breed, like maybe mom was a show dog and dad's the hunting dog,
right.
or vice versa, you know, I don't want to be rich. Or
yeah.
So you'll have some of those puppies will have more of the show lineage.
Oh, yeah. I look at it as a crapshoot at that point.
Yeah,
where it's
exactly.
like,
and
it
that's,
could have more of this trait. It could have
right,
more of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And show dogs, the hunting component, when you get into those really intense show dogs, they don't have any hunting. Generally, it's been kind of pulled out of them.
Yep.
So they, you know, they tell you to, you know, like roll a ball, do something to mimic them having interest in something moving.
Well, look, we've all got freezers full of wings of chucker.
Yeah.
And stuff. With Fletch.
Yeah.
He was the runt of the litter, but he was the one I threw a chucker wing around.
Went right for it.
Oh, and he was just enamored. He was like, "This, I could do this all day."
Yeah.
And I thought,
yeah.
okay, yeah, he's the runt of the litter, but to hell with that. He's pointing already, and he's like showing yeah. that prey drive where he's going after a chucker wing.
Yeah,
and I was
so,
like, all right, that's
so that,
my dog.
Yeah, and that's what they're saying is that's those genetic markers that the dog is like training itself. It's
right.
genetically dispositioned to focus on that. So it's got the hunting lineage. So I was like, oh, that's cool. And one of the big ones is your health and the durability.
Durability.
Yeah. So we can all take a guess at what the two top dogs in the state of Nevada for chucker hunting or upland game bird hunting are.
I'm going to guess one of them's GSP.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's number one. Do you know what number two is? You probably know all three, the top three.
I would guess like a GSP, a GWP.
Yep.
And let's go a Brittany.
Those are you nailed
it. Is that it? Okay.
You nailed it.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yep. And yeah. In that order.
That's GSPs, just from when I think about my friend group that are like diehard trucker guys. Yep. That's
GSPs, wire hairs, and Brittany's are the top three in the state of Nevada.
Okay.
For upland hunters. They really, the literature says if you can find a really good, healthy GSP, you have a dynamite dog.
They got a bunch of inbreeding problems.
And that is it. That's the issue is there are no real breeding regulations for GSPs. They have been so crossbred.
Oh,
so,
okay.
And what I mean by regulation, so I have a good buddy who has poodle pointers.
Okay.
And that is not a poodle and a pointer bred together.
Right.
It's an actual breed that's been around for
totally separate thing.
Totally separate thing. So when he got his puppy, he had to sign like a contract with the breeder.
Okay.
That he had to prove that the dog would be
fixed or neutered.
Spayed or neutered within this certain time frame, and they gave him a date, you know, prior to the dog being able to breed. And if not, they can come and take the dog back and you lose your money.
It's because
they want to control the breeding of the poodle pointers. And there's only a few poodle pointer breeders.
Oh, they don't want like the backyard breeder.
Right. They don't want the backyard breeder like, oh, yeah, that's the second, you know, that's the cousin doing the mom.
And using the lineage as a selling point when the reality is.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Okay. So it's very, so that is where like breeding restriction comes in.
Right.
Where GSPs, I've had two. And both of them were crazy.
Oh, yeah, they
and
are.
One, she died real young because she had all kinds of issues with her, and it was just bad. We had to put her down at like 2.5 years old.
Young.
Hips, back, eyes, ears.
Everything.
Oh, Jesus, she was a wreck.
Okay.
I mean, autoimmune disorders, all kinds of weird stuff, man. She was a train wreck. But sweet dog. Anyway, so that was the one thing that they say, be really careful of, like super duper be careful of that. Like make sure you look at its lineage.
Okay.
Make sure it hasn't been, you know, hanging out with
it. It's got a clean bill of health.
Yeah, exactly. And they're saying that with the wire hairs a little bit too, because they're starting to get a little too bred. Brittany's are solid.
Yeah.
So then I got into, and which we can talk about in the next segment, is I got into why weren't like English setters and poodle pointers in that mix.
Yeah, I'd be interested because there's something without really starting to wax philosophical. I love watching a setter work that tail and everything. There's something, it's like hunting with a recurve and handmade arrows. It's that whole kind of passion part of hunting for me where I'm like, I like watching a setter work. So
yeah.
This is what I want.
Completely.
But I'd be interested to hear what people say, like why setters didn't make the top three or top
setters
whatever.
And the poodle pointers. Yeah, they didn't make the top. Well, but we'll get into that here
after
a break.
Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry, sponsored by Rightful Liberty Arms. We are going to jump right back into our bird dog episode. Here I said it was a grab bag. Outside of housekeeping, I think both Dave and I are going to stay on the bird dog thing. We left off there. You were talking about how setters didn't make the top list. And again, it's that like romanticized thing about hunting that I like. I like hunting behind a setter. Tell me what the issue with them is when it comes to Nevada.
So in the literature, it's saying that English setters are a phenomenal upland game bird dog.
Okay.
They have some of the best scenting abilities. They have some of the best trainability.
Okay.
And some of the, you know, they've got really decent endurance.
Yeah.
Which are some of the big things you want to make sure you have, especially when you're hiking the mountains of Nevada. You know, you're not going to hunt with a basset hound.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
exactly.
But one of the biggest drawbacks for the English setter and the poodle pointer, which was kind of odd in my, was their coats.
How so?
Because they're longer haired. like on our getting English.
Burrs and stuff.
Exactly. Maintenance and the burrs and their paws are, can be real hairy. You know, they got a lot of hair on their paws.
Right.
Getting the burrs and the foxtails and stuff in between the paws where
okay.
GSPs and GWPs, they generally don't. They're pretty bare. But I thought, well, Brittany's are pretty hairy. I mean, they got a lot of longer hair. But
that was their
big thing was that.
Okay.
Beyond that, they would have been on the list all day long. But also getting English setters. In the state of Nevada and, you know, it's access to acquiring a GSP or a GWP is pretty darn easy because everybody and their mother's breeding them in some way, shape, or form where, say, a poodle pointer, because poodle pointers are on there as well, and it was their coat, and they didn't have the endurance. They were a better, like a pheasant dog,
okay,
I guess, and more of a meadow hunting dog, maybe for huns or something, or quail. But they also had the coat issue, and their coat's really heavy.
Yeah.
So the, like, overheating.
I just always, and no knock against your friend, but when I hear someone is showing up to camp with a poodle pointer, I'm always, I'll use kind of an obscure reference here. So for those that don't get it, I'll explain in a minute. But when somebody says, oh, I'm bringing my poodle pointer, I always half expect them to open the shotgun case and take out like a darn side-by-side in 16 gauge. And so for those that don't get the reference, it's a French really rare side-by-side shotgun and it uses a super weird locking mechanism. So I always put those, I half expect like the Stetson Indiana Jones hat.
The knee-high leather boots.
Yeah, I'm always like, oh, you brought a poodle pointer?
Yeah.
Oh, great. This guy's going to tell me all about box lock versus side lock and he's going to wax philosophical till 2 a.m. about shotguns and the beauty of up. That's that stereotype thing or bias I have against guys that are like, oh, I'm bringing a poodle pointer. I'm like, oh,
I always think,
can't wait to see your 16 gauge.
Yeah. Whenever I hear it, and even with, you know, him being one of my, probably my best buddy, we've known each other since grade school and being around those dogs for the last 15 years.
Oh, is it Jody?
Yeah, it is. It's
all
Jody.
Right. Shout out Jody. I take it back. I'm sorry.
You know, and they're right next door to me. I still see Ringo and stuff and think poodle pointer and all I see is Paris Hilton with a pink bag and a freaking ugly ass hairy dog sticking its head out of its purse.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, I just, after all this time, I still
they're
think
just
of that.
Weird.
But yeah.
Anyway.
But going back to acquisition of these animals, English setters are tougher to acquire. So that played a part in this analysis was how easy is it to get a puppy? How easy is it to, you know, train it and find people that want to train English or poodle pointers and stuff. Poodle pointers, Jody's, his first one took 2 years to get.
He waited 2 years?
2 years. He got on the list. There was only, I think, two breeders in the Western area that were hunting breeds.
Okay.
There's a few that are strictly show breeds.
Right, right.
So, and he got on the list and, you know, the dams can only pump out so many puppies.
Right.
So he was on the list for almost 2 years.
You know, I say that like I'm shocked, but if I think back, we waited a couple years for Dixie, my Brittany. Yeah. And it's not like finding a Brittany is hard, but we had hunted over the mom and the dad. And so I wanted one of their offspring.
Right.
So it wasn't like a hard to find breed. It was just that
just specific.
I wanted one of their dogs.
Right, exactly. So that was part of this analysis was like acquiring the dog, the ease of acquiring one of these dogs. That was the two reasons why those did not make the list.
Okay. But, well, I found an English setter breeder. And so far, I mean, and we'll have him on the show at some point, Aaron, that's training Fletch.
Right.
He says he's a great dog. He's growing on me. I love him. I'm excited to see what he'll do this season. So he had no qualms about training a setter. I will tell you the number one, all this stuff, and we'll jump back to the list, but the number one thing I look for with any, not breed specific, paws. Paws and pads, because as everyone knows, Nevada will chew dogs up.
Yeah.
The country we chase birds in will just destroy their feet. And I always look at the mom and the dad, and if there are any other litter mates, I'll look at them too. But anytime you see a dog with those Not ridging, but around the edges of their paws, they've got that grainier
paw. Right, 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 yeah.
It just doesn't hold up as well. So I look for a smooth pad all the way around. And now somebody listening out there, if you're a dog trainer or whatever, you might be going, nah, you're 100% wrong. I don't know if it's an old wives' tale, but if I see a smooth pad all the way around and the mom and dad's feet aren't chewed up, I'm like, that's it. Good pads, perfect. That's what I want.
And another thing that they talked about was the, because we have such a versatile weather pattern here, you know, we could be hunting with t-shirts and shorts for the beginning of the season. And then, you know, 2 feet of snow, the end of the season.
So the season, how about in like a span of a weekend?
Of a weekend, right. So they were talking about that with the different breeds, which I would have thought GSPs would have been at the bottom of the list if when it comes to coat, because they don't have jack squat. But they still rank the best because I think just
why did you get GSPs?
Well, my first GSP was given to me.
Okay, it was that was what started it.
Yeah, that's kind of what started it. The person that I got it from had new kids, had babies, not like just like car smell new, but actually
brand new
babies.
Yeah.
As we all know, GSPs are crazy as all get up.
Oh yeah,
energy level and their anxiety. I mean, they are a nonstop parkour.
Yes,
nonstop. And the wife had enough of it with little ones and then a newborn. He gave me the dog, and it ended up being a really good dog, but it was
high energy,
super high. But any bird dog you get is going to be high energy. I mean, Gage at times, he is absolutely, you would think, okay, he got into the paint or something because he's absolutely out of his mind.
Cover your ears if you're listening, Gage. I love
Gage,
you.
Yeah. So you're going to have a high energy dog. Do not get a bird dog as your family dog that you think is going to sit in front of the TV on a pillow. Right. And just let your kids crawl all over it. Get a lab. Get a golden retriever. You know, get a basset hound or get a big stuffed animal.
Well, that's the big thing I'm not an expert. I've had a handful of bird dogs over the years. But the one thing I would tell people is if you're thinking about getting a bird dog, be realistic with yourself.
Yes.
And so I've just come to realize, you know, my phone is full of text messages Monday through Friday. Hey, we going to get out this weekend? Hey, you want to go here?
Oh, yeah.
And then come Friday at about 4 o'clock, when I check in and I'm like, hey, I'm rolling out at 3:30 Saturday morning. Who wants to go? It's either crickets or the honey do list has grown. And suddenly everybody that was a chucker hunt. And so I find myself more often than not by myself. And I just realized for a lot of people, man, be realistic. Are you going to be an every weekend of the season hunter? Or are you going to be like a couple times a month or maybe once a month hunter and then base your choice on that? But you got to be honest with yourself and know like, man, this is what I am and this is what I'm not.
Yeah. Cause a lot of the literature states these dogs need to get out.
Oh,
okay. If you live in a housing community where your backyard's only 10 feet and your side yard's only five, 6 feet. And you're wondering why your dog is ripping the bejesus out of your backyard and dragging your drip line to the front of the house and tearing crap up. There's a reason, because they need to see some open country and they need to put their nose to the ground and they need to just grid.
Yes.
Like I take Gage out. Well, we have a fair amount of property like you do.
Yeah. So fortunate.
Yeah, we're fortunate. So they can run around. He can run around the backyard and chase the quail that are back there and sit on point. And
I've got an acre that loads up with quail down by the back fence. My bird dogs can just roam.
They love it.
Yes.
They love it. So, I mean, that's a big component is know what you're getting.
Okay.
So that's how I got the first one. The second one, I decided I purchased that one. That was the one she passed away. She had to put her down at like 2.5. Then after that was my lab, my black lab.
Okay.
Starbar Power Ranger.
Starbar Power Ranger.
So, and she was phenomenal. That dog was flipping amazing dog.
Yeah.
And then after that was Sergejalot.
Sergejalot? That's his name?
Yeah.
Oh, I won't hold it against you, Gage. Hey, let's take a quick break. Final segment of the show coming up. Thank you to Battle Born Tree Service for Hunters by Hunters for sponsoring the show. Hey, Hey, final segment of the show right now. If you miss any of the previous segments, you can always go to 991fmtalk.com. Just click on the podcast tab and look for Nevada Backcountry, and you'll find all the past episodes and segments there. Now, we got a lot to rip through in this last segment. I got some questions for you about GSPs and everything, but we kind of put the cart before the horse, and we started just going on like, hey, this is what I look for. This is what people recommend. Prices on these things.
Yes.
They ain't cheap.
No, they aren't. So if you're like, again, so going back to what we were talking about when we were saying the stages of where you might want to get a dog.
Right.
So if you're okay with getting a puppy and going through the puppy phase of things getting chewed up and all of that wonderfulness.
Yeah.
You're probably looking in the range of for any one of these, like the four, I'm going to go with the Let's go with the four dogs. Let's go with GSPs, GWPs, Brittany's, and English.
Okay.
All right. We'll leave poodle pointers out because they are stupid expensive.
Oh, okay.
They are way twice as much as any of these other three.
Yeah.
Or four. So you're looking at ranges from what I've gotten into between $500 and $1,200 bucks for the puppy.
Okay.
Depending on lineage. Yeah. And that's where it comes down to it. Like if you're really dialed in and like he has to be or she has to be. She has to have at least three generations of just rock star bird hunting lineage, a couple maybe trial champion dogs in there, that type of thing. You're looking at the 1,200 and up range,
right.
Maybe 15.
Yep.
But if you're like, you know, no, it's just a hunting dog. Mom and dad both hunted. The lineage goes back, and these were all hunting dogs, but not trial dogs, not, you know, carrying medals or any kind of stuff like that. You could be more in the, you know, the $500 to $800 range.
What so about just, for like a green broke dog, like a dog with some training, maybe a year, two years old?
Yeah. So if we drop into, the green broke dog.
Yeah.
The literature says to tack on about $1,000.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah. You know, on average, about $1,000 to the cost of the dog. But when you get into the fully finished dog,
yeah,
you could be looking at paying like $3,500 plus for a dog fully finished. You could, you know, depending on what level of fully finished we're talking here, like hand commands, or is it just whistle, or is it just, you know.
God dang, I wish that number were higher. I'm going to say something right now.
Yeah.
Cynthia, turn off your radio if you were listening.
Gina, do the same.
I budgeted about $4,000 for a bird dog.
No, yeah, that's about safe.
I mean, you figure the puppy and then, you know, any decent trainers, about $1,000 a month.
Right.
And usually the initial 3-month program, if you add like a 30-day, you're talking about, so there's right there is 4 months. I usually between $4,000 and $5,000 is what I budget for a bird dog.
These are average prices because I've seen fully finished dogs advertised for like up to $75,000 to $89,000.
Which
fully finished dogs.
I figure puppy, the initial gun dog program, and then anything that I find in that first season, and say I send it back to the trainer for a month or two for a tune up.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, if I come in under 5,000, we'll say is my limit. That's what I budget for a bird dog. All said and done.
Because I know English Setter is a great trainer out in Susanville, Britt.
Okay.
With Skeeter Setters.
Okay.
He did the initial part for Gage, but it was still a little, and he just kind of caught Gage to that green broke stage,
right?
Because then I wanted to finish him off. 100%. I wanted to train him to fit my style.
Well, and I'll say something too, Dave, that I'm not bad-mouthing trainers out there. A lot of these people will claim like, oh, it's a finished dog or it's a whatever. And that dog has not seen anything but pen-raised birds.
Correct.
And so it may be phenomenal. But as you and I know, there's a difference between wild birds and pen-raised birds.
Oh, buddy.
That's like, I've got friends back east that love chukar hunting. And I'm like, yo, your little 100-acre hunt club in Pennsylvania,
where you gotta shake the dog, or shake the bird so it's so
kick
dizzy.
Kick it out of the bush.
That's not chukar hunting, dude. No, I know Britt out in Susanville, he finishes them off on wild birds.
Okay.
Takes them out in the field and gets them on actual wild birds several times, not just once and like, all right, he's good. No. So he's awesome. But
well, and free plug for Aaron at Battleborn.
Yeah.
I think Fletch has hunted Oregon, Idaho, Montana,
yeah,
and Nevada. He yeah. doesn't do anything but wild birds.
Yeah, and that's a good thing to look at when you do want to send them off to a school, is like asking the trainer, like, how do you do it? Is it just in your backyard with dizzied up birds that you stick underneath a bush?
Right.
Or, you know, yeah. So those are things, those are important components.
So yeah, back to the price. I don't know, man, yeah. maybe I'm a fool, but that's my budget. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't take it lightly. It's an investment.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. And that's, like I said, these were average prices that came across my searches. So,
okay.
And even when I saw them, I was like, all right, that seems to be a little light.
Yeah.
You know, but when it's an average, it's an average. So.
True.
So just take that with a grain of salt. And again, you gotta know what the lineage of the animal is, and also the shots and all the prep stuff they do with the puppies and everything else.
Yes.
If they're being declawed or dew claws and
removed,
all the other stuff, yep. all of that increases costs significantly.
So. Man, we could do 3 or 4 shows because I got my stuff on dew claws. I've got supplements. God. I've got
Someone was just posted a picture of their dog ripped one of those off. On their hunt recently, and dude, you would have thought the thing was dead.
Yeah.
The amount of blood that was all over the place.
Oh yeah, they bleed just, like crazy when they tear them up.
Ripped it off.
Yeah.
So yeah, but anyway, you know, in
bottom line, Nevada.
Full summary, the whole 9 yards. Placed all of this criteria. I weighted it, so I had like 5 different criteria. And I'll just go through them really quick. I had the ruggedness of the terrain at 30% to it. The durability and the adaptability of the dog, 20%. The ability for it to have a good amount of stamina and cover range.
Right.
You know, depending on the type of hunting you do, if you cover, like you and I, we cover 7-8 miles in a day, if not more.
I just did 14 out of...
So, you know, so you're going to want a dog that can do some coverage.
Yeah.
20%, the hunting style and its abilities for its trainability and hunting style, 20%. And then its control, handling, and family connection is 10%.
Okay.
Threw that down at the bottom.
Yeah.
So it came out.
Good man.
So it still came out, as crazy as it's going to be.
Yeah.
The wire hair came out number one at 88%. The short hair came out at 85%.
Okay.
The English setter came out third at 80%. The Brittany came in at 77%. And then the poodle pointer came in at 73%. So that's how mine broke down.
That's how it broke out. So is that what, are you going to look for a GWP now?
So, yeah, I'm going to stay away from the GSPs because I've had them and I know some of their issues. And so, I'm going to look for a wire hair or stick with my good old-fashioned English setter.
English setter. Okay.
So.
Couple last Henry thoughts on it. I've hunted behind GSPs. I've hunted behind GWPs. I personally stay away from the, I'll call them hard breeds, just because they're not necessarily conducive to the way I hunt. I like a couple hundred yard range on my dogs. So a couple hundred yards out, I shoot small gauges. I like that. I'll call it like a middle range on dogs.
Yeah.
I like the ease of having a dog I can throw out in the backyard and it's going to naturally just wear itself out on the quail back there.
Right.
So I always, the Brittany setter, stuff like that is kind of my wheelhouse. The GSPs I've hunted behind were phenomenal dogs. But if a dog's locked up on point at 800 yards, I mean, it could be 30, 40 minutes till I get there, depending on the country.
Yeah.
So I was always, and again, I know this is a training thing, maybe not necessarily a breed specific thing.
Right, right.
But I always kind of shied away from them because I was like, man, I don't care if the thing finds every covey on the hillside. If it finds them 800 yards from me across a canyon.
It's no good.
I mean, so it just doesn't, both of my dogs work at that. In fact, I got pictures Aaron sent me of his little tracker, and Fletch is ranging right at that like buck and a quarter to about 200 yards. That's his sweet spot for where he ranges, and then he'll check in and everything.
Yeah. But, so Engage, when he does his grids, he never goes any farther than about 50 yards in front of me.
Okay, he works close.
But that's what I want. I want him to be close, and then he'll get a little ways out, and then he'll stop and look back. And if I put my hand up, he'll sit and wait until I get close enough, and then he goes back on his grid. So, and that's how I like him to be relatively close, so when he does get on point, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to rock and roll.
Right.
You know,
and seasons like this, having a dog that ranges 200 yards.
Yeah. That might
could be a problem.
Right. It could be, you know, so you really got to figure out what you want. And like me, I let him in the house. So I don't want one that's going to be parkouring through my house and like dragging the sofa into another room or something.
Right.
So that's where the GSP thing kind of really, because sometimes you don't know. You don't know till they get a little older if it's like, okay, this dog is missing a chromosome.
Yeah.
There's
I got
no
four
doubt.
Small kids. Yeah. I don't want four small bowling pins.
No, no. So I'm lucky I don't have any kids, or
kids at home.
At home. At home. But, you know, when you are out there looking for a new hunting partner on four legs, there's a lot of things I've really realized really need to come into play and really be honest with yourself. Don't grab the dog because someone's offering it to you for $200 or something. Like, oh, I'll just get it. It'll be fine. Make sure you get what's going to work for you, because
it's
a big investment, and they're going to be around a while.
Yeah.
They're going to be in your family for quite some time.
That's a fact. Well, hopefully. So.
Hopefully.
Yeah. But this last thought on bird dogs, if you're in my friend group and I've stopped texting you back, don't take offense. I'm getting to the point where if you don't have a dog to bring hunting, it's like, man, I'm tired of all the wear and tear on my dogs. And we could do a whole episode on like the social niceties of chucker hunting and being a good chucker partner.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of at that point where it's like, man, if you don't want to pony up for a dog, I got $10,000 in dogs. Hold on, Cynthia earmuff. I got $10,000 in dogs. That's my time, my money that goes into this stuff.
Yeah.
Man, don't be the guy that shows up late, never wants to get a dog or anything. I'm kind of like, I got the vet bills. I got the supplement bills. Mm. I got the food bills. I just maybe want to hunt with somebody else that understands what that's
understands
like.
Understands the value of these things and the importance of them.
So,
yeah.
So there you go. There's my gripe. But hey, hate to end on a sour note. It's been a good season thus far. Get up, get out, go hunt, take your dogs with you, and we will see you next week on Nevada Backcountry.